we're starting the top of Beis Chedem and Aleph. The Mishnah discussed, talking about Boshet, that when it comes to a Eved Knani, that you are Chayav in the Chamisha Dvarim. Then Rabbi Huda makes a statement on the Eved Knani, obviously, Bechutz Min Hashevet, if it's his owner, right, meaning that it's his own Eved, but Rabbi Huda says, Ein Lav Adim Boshet. He makes a categorical statement that Eved Knani does not have Boshet. Now the Gemara asks here at the top of Pechet and Laos, my time is the Rabbi Huda. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Huda? Amar Torah, the Pasuk says, Ki Yenatsu Anashim Yachdav Ish Ve'achiv. Right, so we learn out the source of Boshet in the Torah is from the Pasuk about the woman who intervenes on behalf of her husband, and Ve'chav Ve'gushav. Right, so over there we say Katatoa is Kapah, to take up his harm, and that story, or the situation, begins, Ki Yenatsu Anashim Yachdav Ish Ve'achiv. There are two individuals that are quarreling. So now, what's the ish ve'achiv? B'mish yesh lo achva. That's only someone who has achva. Yet the eved she'en lo achva. That excludes an eved who has no, or doesn't have a principle or a condition of achva. Right? So what is a condition of achva? What does it mean that a eved has achva? So there are different explanations here about what pas could be. Rashi says, if you look at the top Rashi on the page, that's the eved she'en lo achva. Im Yisrael she'en ba b'kahal. That's one, he has no achva Yisrael because he's not permitted to marry into the normal kahal of Yisrael. And in Mizrach Hashad, it brings the Lishna Achrino, is that Eved ein lo achva shemutar b'chulto. He doesn't have a din of achva because mitzad arayot, he's mutar to marry his sister, b'ish tachiv, and his sister-in-law. Dichtiv im achamor, and we dashen over there, am hadomeh lechamor. So there is no connection or yukus between them. Tosus over here quotes what seems to be the Rashi that's found in the Mesorot Hashas, and he says about that, Perish en yotzei chalatzav kruim achim, mashe en kein begir, that his yotzei chalatzav, his children, not that his brother or his sister, but rather his yotzei chalatzav kruim achim, mashe en kein begir, yotzei chalatzav rotzei akuntris lefarish. It's a strange statement. He says that he's explaining that children are not considered brothers and sisters, not that you don't have a brother or sister, but from the parent's side, they're not considered to be part of one family. So, either the explanation is that they're not permitted to marry into the kahal, or the other explanation is that somehow they lack, which we're going to see later on in the Gemara, a form of yichus, which either makes them not children of their parents, or not brothers and sisters. Alright, Rabbanan achiv hu b'mitzvot. Rabbanan say, no, he is his achiv. Why is he achiv? Because he's achiv hu b'mitzvot. And every kanani is chayav b'mitzvot ke isha. So since he's an achiv b'mitzvot, he classifies or qualifies as an achiv, and therefore he'll be included in Boshet. El miyato, the Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there are other times in the Torah where we use the term ach, and we don't necessarily exclude a eved kenani. So el miyato, Rabbi Yehuda, zomim me eved lo yarogu. If that's the case, that eidim zomim, they're testifying against an eved kenani, they should not be put to death, they're thieves. But eidim lo kasher zamam lachsot le'achiv. They wanted to do something to their brother. Well, an Eved Knani is not classified as their brother, so there should be no punishment of Eden Zomimim. It comes to a situation in which they're testifying about an Eved Knani. Amarav, Amarav Sheshes, Amakra, Ubiarta, Rav Mikabecha, Mikol Makom. We have an inclusion, we have a ribui of Ubiarta, Rav Mikabecha, which means no matter what, despite who the testimony is about. Elamiata, the Rabbanon, Eved Yehe Kasher, the Machut. Rabbanon, Eved should be Kasher, the Machut, because why do we darshan by Machut? Right, by Markov would say you have to maybe Karabachecha. That has to be someone from amongst your brethren in order to be a melech, in order to be appointed as a king. Now, if you, according to Rabbi Yehuda, says Achecha excludes an Eved Knani, that makes sense. An Eved Knani cannot be a melech. On the other hand, right, according to the Chachamim would say that an Eved Knani qualifies as Achecha, then he should also qualify under Mikarabachecha, that you're allowed to appoint a king from that. So Kashalam Rachat Imer, the Tameh, Tikshilacha, Ger, the Divrei Akel. According to you, not only is an Eved Knani a problem, but a Ger should be a problem even according to the Rabbanan and according to Rabbi Yehuda. El Amakra, what is the Pasuk saying? Mikarev Achecha, Mimuvchar Shebeachecha. Has to be the best or the choicest of your brethren. It's not clear to me what exactly the drasha is here. I guess you have to say Mikarev Achecha from the monks, like we have that some sort of mi means amongst your achecha, but not all of your achecha. So either mi or kerev is some sort of qualifying the achecha, that it's not all achecha, but amongst your brothers, and that means shemuchar shebe achecha. Elmi atala rabbanan, he evit kasher le'edut. But the rabbanan, then maybe an evit should be kasher le'edut. Why? The sif, v'nei ed sheker eid, sheker anab be'achiv. So sounds like somebody, anybody who's an achiv can be involved in edut. The front of Yehuda excludes an evit, but Gemara Chachamim may be included. Amarula edut lo matzitamar. Edut you cannot include them for. Why? Ache edut the kavu chomer misha. Because they have a kavu chomer for misha. Ma isha shi ruliyah levov b'kal. And isha who is able to join the kal, sulad edut is excluded from presenting testimony. Eved sheino ra'ui levov b'kal. And Eved who is unable to join the kal, and udin she pasul edut. Currently he'll be pasul the edut. Right, so how do you know an isha is not ro'i out of Hobakal? Because that's because we have the pasuk of Vamdushne Anashim. Right, so when it says Vamdushne Hanashim, it's Anashim velo Nashim. Men and not women that are included in the parsha of Ziud. And there are two parts, Katan also may be excluded from that pasuk of Anashim velo Ktanim. And Ktanim might also be, Rashi points out here, might be an Idrish Ina Yachud Hazima. So therefore, Ketanim and the Isha are precluded from being Edim. If they're precluded from being Edim, so too an Eved Kenani should be precluded from being an Ed. So Mar says, "Mal Isha Shekinei Ruyah Lamila." Wait a minute, the Isha has a Kula, and therefore you can't make a Kavachomer. What's the Kula of Isha? Kula of Isha is that she doesn't have a Milah. So maybe in Tomar Be'evet, Shubra Oiz Amilah. Evet can have a Milah, and since Evet can have a Milah, maybe that in itself is enough to be a Chumrah to allow him to be also be an Eid. So it says, Katan Yuchiyah. So again, we explained that Katan is also Fatsul the Eidut. Maybe for one of two reasons that Rashi quotes over here, that either because Anashim Velok Tanim, or because it's an Eidut, Shiyata Yechol Lehazimah. So Katan Yuchiyah Shiyeshno B'Milah, which is an interesting statement of the Gemara, Shiyeshno B'Milah. That a katan has a din of milah upasul edut mal katan she'ino b'mitzvot. Right? What does it mean that a katan is not included in the mitzvot? To mar be'evet shu b'mitzvot. On the other hand, a eved has shekel to mitzvot because he has his chayv mitzvot like an isha. Isha tochiyach she'ishna b'mitzvot upasul edut. And you use a woman on the other side who is included in mitzvot is also psul edut. So it can't be milah and Chiyuv mitzvot cannot be the underlying factor that allows you to be kasher le'edut, because we have a child or a katan who's chayav b'milah or has some shaychut b'milah, and therefore he's still pasul le'edut, and we have an isha who is chayavet in a mitzvot, and nevertheless she is also pasul le'edut. So neither of those two factors within Eved Kenani could be the things that generate an ability to give edut. If you take katan and isha together, they're not included in all mitzvot. They don't have a qualification. They're not included in all mitzvot. They only have some mitzvot. And nevertheless, they're still pasul le'avid. So to an Eved Kenani, it should be the same way, right? That he's not included in all mitzvot, and he's pasul le'avid. Now the question is, according to a katan, right? Isha, we can explain. Isha is chayavet in a mitzvot. She's ptulah in mitzvot v'seishah z'man dromah. We understand why she's chayavet in parts of the mitzvot, and we understand why she's not chayavet in milah, right? Because those are obvious. For the katan, it's not as obvious. The Gemara says, okay, he's shayachet b'milah. True, he can get a milah done to him, and he's not shayach b'mitzvot. But then the Torah says, then the Gemara says over here that a katan is not shayach b'chol ha'mitzvot. That means that he is shayach in some mitzvot. What is the mitzvah that a katan is shayachin? Right, that's a statement or difficult situation. So look at Rashi. Rashi says something. Enam b'chol mitzvot elav miktat daisha mechuyevet b'lavim v'onshin. Right, a woman is chayevet in onshin and lavim, not in mitzvot seishah as man groma. V'katan yishno b'milah. Katan chayev b'milah. All right, that's not so clear. We learned in the Mishnah in Kiddushin, right? Mitzvot av. Right, mitzvot av elaben. That what are mitzvot that the father is obligated to do for the child? That's the mitzvah of milah. Right? So the mitzvah of milah is the obligation of the father to do for the child. if the father doesn't do it, then the obligation then moves over and devolves upon the child. The question of when there's a chiyuv karet happens to be machlokas harishonim. The child only gets karet if he dies without having a milah. Or once he reaches the age of obligation, right, or age of bar mitzvah, right, either age of bar mitzvah, but then again he's not a katan. So what does this mean that he's yeshno b'mitzvot?
You would be able to say every time he's shayach
b'mitzvot and he's not. Yeah, but we said that he's shayach b'mitzvot. And we said he's shayach b'mitzvot. No, he's shayach b'mitzvot because he's a chayav b'mitzvot and he's shayach.
Right,
that's not a problem. The problem here is what is the mitzvah that a katan is shayach in?
It's a
bit.
He has the potential, it's like the seed of the
I assume that it means that he's a chelik because he's the one the mitzvah is the object that the mitzvah is performed upon. Right? You have to say something to that effect. But again, you have to explain that there's a might have implications about how we view the katan's obligation in the face of the father's obligation. I mean, for instance, there's no father there. We say there the basin has to intervene or the mother has to intervene to provide the milah, but you still have to think about what then again is the chiyuva katan or what is the obligation of the katan. Maybe the obligation really is on the katan before the milah, but he's just not able to because he is a katan. So therefore, we say the father steps in his place to take care of it until he can take care of it himself, right? Or until he reaches the age of bar mitzvah. But it might have implications about how we view the katan's chiyuv with regards to milah, right? Now, the Gemara says, wait a minute. If you use ishan katan, malas tada shavish shabein shikeno eno ish. Right? They have a common factor between them. What's the common factor between a katan and isha? They're not a man. And an Eved Tzneni is a man. So maybe just being a man is enough of a chumrah that allows you to be made. So Marva Eved Shuish, right, the pircha on the Tzadash Eved. That there's a common factor between Isha and Katan, which is an Eno Ish, which so maybe the Eved Tzneni is a chumrah, which is a quote unquote a chumrah, but Ish, which allows him to be an Eid over here. Ela Tetemi Gazlan. So learn that from Gazlan. Mava Gazlan, she came out of Garmulo. What about Gazlan? Gazlan is Pazal Eidut because he did something. He actively caused himself to be Pazal Eidut. So Marva Eved Shainu Masav Garmulo. And Eved is, by nature, is Pasul Eidut, not because he did anything. When Gazlan and one, either Isha or Katan, if you put them together, then you have a Tzad HaShaveh between them, which is that whatever Gazlan takes care of the Ish aspect of it, right? And then the Mila or the either whether it's the lack of Mila or the lack of Mitzvot, that will not be affected because you have Gazlan. So you have the Tzad HaShaveh between Gazlan, and what about Gazlan and Masev Garmulo? Gazlan caused the problem of Psul Eidut that we have from Isha and Katan, which come from themselves. I mean, that they're inherently Psul Eidut and not something that they did that caused them to be Psul Eidut. Alright, now, it's just interesting. Tosfos asks here, we just discussed this issue of Achiv, right, that, why is Achiv, according to Rabbi Yehuda, says that it excludes an Eved Kenani, and Chachamim say it includes an Eved Kenani. So now, if the cases that Achiv, the Gemara brought down cases of Achiv, which are Melech, Edim Zomamim, and Edut, but there are other times in the Torah that also mention Achicha, which are, if you look at Tosin Tichtim, Kashim Ezom of Achiv, Tema, the Chela Rabbi Yehuda, Miribit, Ona'ah, Begonev Nefesh, kidnapping, right, overcharging, and Ribit, interest, all of these things have the word Achiv. And even Saka, Namiktiv, Achicha Evyon. All these things have Achicha, which according to Rabbi Yehuda would mean that an Eved Kenani is precluded or excluded from all these dinim, meaning that you could charge him Ribit, you can kidnap him, all these items, because he'd be excluded from Achicha. So Mar says, Umi Yachsat Mashma, Dein Kokach Chuval Yitin Saka Le'Eved. That we did see earlier in Gemara and Gittin, where there might not be such an obligation to give Saka, your tzedakah money to an Eved Kenani. Because the, right, so he brings the proof to that. The other thing, Gonev Nefesh, what about kidnapping? Na'amino chayab be'eved afilu l'rabbanan d'b'nei Joseph. So Gonev Nefesh mi'Yisrael. Now you're only chayab if you kidnap a Jew. If you kidnap a Eved Kenani, then you would not be chayab mita, en ochanami. And ribit gona, there is no problem. Why? Because ain't kinyan le'eved below rabbo. So there is no such thing as ribit gona, because since he doesn't have independent ownership, and you're not going to have cases of ribit vona. So Tosfos goes through a number of these cases that have word achicha and shows how, truthfully, that the why the Gemara didn't ask about them is because Eved Kenani is really not included in those parshiot. It's not shayach in those parshiot. Right, the other thing is that we know from the Gemara in Kiddushin that anytime it comes to a parallel between Eved Kenani and Isha, we learn it out from the Gzeirah Shavah of la Isha, right? Eved Kenani to Isha. So why over here does the Gemara not just do that? Simple thing, we know Isha is Tzula Le'edut. They're saying every man needs to lay duke because they're shavah la miisha. What happened to that? Because they were shavah. So Tosfos here says an interesting chiddush that he says that chi gamrinan la la miisha ainu la hachmira la eved. That's only the chumra. Latzot o ki Yisrael lechalaf achot b'mitzvot she'ashi'a mechayevet. That's to extend his obligations to be like an isha. Aval gor'o mi'ish. To make him less than an ish. U'lepos lo le'edut ki'isha lo nilmot. That we don't do. Is a minadin kasher hu le'edut. Because then you're not a minadin. He should be kasher le'edut. And therefore we don't learn la'ala mi'isha. Only to be machmir on him, but not to be mekil on him. So over here, this would be mekil in some senses, because it would be pasul de'edut, it would take away, it would detract from his either obligations or his privileges, and that we don't use the word la la yisha from, only to extend his obligations. So we use the word la la. Alright. Okay, Mar Brei de Ravina Amar. Mar Brei de Ravina says, Amar Kara, lo yum tu avot al banim, lo yum tu api avot, she'en lem chayez banim. So Rav Mar Brei de Ravina says, this is the source, why Nebuchadnezzar is pasul de'edut, because it says, Layim tu avot abanim, that the fathers will not die by the hands of the children. Layim tu api avot, right, that the, she'enlem chayiz banim, right, so they will not, Layim tu api avot, she'enlem chayiz banim, they won't die from fathers that don't have, chayiz banim, don't have, children that follow after them. So what do you mean children don't have them? They don't have yichus. Every Kenani does not have yichus, and therefore an Every Kenani would be precluded from Eidut. These takadaka de amrinon, if you think that it means pasuk pshat, loyim to avot al banim, right, that it means that the be'edut banim, right, that the fathers cannot die based on the testimony of their children, lift up rachman loyim to avot al b'nehem, right, then they should have used the possessive form, which is their children cannot put them to death. Because the problem is of karov, as Rashi said, they're relatives, so the children can't testify about their parents. So it should be b'nehem, right, banim shalehem. So my banim, so why did the Torah use the term banim and not b'nehem? Two things. One is that, number one, a child can't testify against the father. And number two is that you will not die based on a vote that I don't have chayiz banim. Who's a vote that don't have chayiz banim? Who doesn't have yichus? That is a eved kenani. Elamiata. If that's the case, what about the second half of the pasuk? It says, banim lo yimtu al avot. Right? If you say that banim lo yimtu al avot, akanami lo yimtu al pi banim, she'enem chayiz avot. Then the banim should also not be able to have eidut if they don't have any yichus from the father. So who is that? Who's the yichus from the father? Ela ger. Akanami the pasul eidut. Then a ger should be pasul eidut. Every kenani does not have yichus. I mean that his children do not belong to him. A ger, which is gayer, has no shaykhut to his whole family, so he has no yichus to his father. Himri yaki ashko. How can you compare the case? A ger no chayas lamavo. A ger does not have chayas, meaning that in terms of parents. He has no connection to his previous family. The Mata Yeshua Chayes, but the family that he generates or creates while he is a Jew, they do have Yichus after him, and he does have a Yichus to Mata. The Fuke Eved, no Chayes, lo the Mala, lo the Mata. He's excluding Eved that doesn't have Chayes either way. He doesn't have, he's no Yichus to his parents, and he's no Yichus down below him. These talk about that, Gir Pasul Eidut, because if you think a Gir is Pasul Eidut, lift up Rav Mana, then the Pasuk should have just said, Loim Tuah Votel B'nehem. The Kedamina, it should have started out the Pasuk, Loyim Tu Avot Al Benehem, then I would know children can't testify against their fathers. And then say in the second half of the Pasuk, Loyim Tu Be'edut Banim, that they won't die Be'edut Banim. It's so that, I'm sorry, Loyim, the Kedamina, Loyim Tu Be'edut Banim, like we said before, that means that they will not die with the testimony of their children. B'nechtov Rachmanu Banim, Loyim Tu Al Avot. And from the second half of the Pasuk, which will say, Banim Loyim Tu Al Avot, that will learn the Shema Minah Trey. Learn two things out of that. Chada lo yimtu banim be'edut avot. Number one, the children won't die by the testimony of their father. Vidach lo yimtu al banim she'en lahem chayis avot. And number two is that children who have no chayis, have no yichus to parents, they will not be able to be, edim. And who's that? That's a ger. So the first half of the pasuk, we read like the half a meaning of the Gemara, which then only teaches us one thing, which is lo yimtu avot al b'nehem. That's the way the pasuk should have read. And the second half of the puzzle says, "Vaneim loyim tu alavot," that we will leave alone. And since we leave it alone, now we have two limudim from that. One is that a father can't testify against the child, and number two, a child without yichus from the parents has no connection to his parents will not be able to testify. Who's that? A ger. So what about Eved? The Eved naftalei b'kal v'chomer migir. I gave him that from b'kal v'chomer. My ger to the maluin lo chayis avalamata yesh lo chayis ger that only has no yichus one way, meaning above him but not below to his children. Pasul Eidud, and he's from the Levit Chain of Kais, Bola Mal, Bola Mat, Eidud, Dim Shu, Pasul Eidud, and certainly he is Pasul Eidud. So, Ella Mitzabrach, my Aliyum to Avot Albanim, the fact that the Torah then went out of its way, and in the first Pasuk said, first part of the Pasuk says, Aliyum to Avot Albanim, the Mashma Aliyum to Api Avot, Shein Lo Chayiz Banim. So that fact that the Torah went out of its way to say, Aliyum to Avot Albanim, teaches you two things. One is, that children can't testify against their father or parents. Number two is, that a father who has no chayis to his children, meaning that he has no lineage through his children, his children do not pick up any yuchus from him or any connection to him. Who is that? That's an evet, is pasul eidut. In fact, the Torah has to write that an evet is pasul eidut tells you it must be that a ger is kasher eidut, that he could be a ger eidut. Shmami ha evet shein lo chayis lo lamata lamata, who is pasul eidut? Aval ger, kem sheyesh lo chayis lamata, kasher eidut. But a ger is chayis lamata, is kasher eidut. The Gemara says, v'chi teimo, if that's the case, then how should the pasul be read? It should have read, lo yum tu avot, al banim. That teaches you two things. One, that evet is pasul eidut, because he has mechayis either way. And number two, it teaches you that children can't testify against the father. But the second half of the pasuk should have read, right, that you that instead of reading, right, lo, the ubanim lo yimtu al avot, it should be ubanim lo yimtu al avotehem. Right, because we don't need two limud in from the second half of the pasuk. We only need one limud. What's that limud? That fathers can't testify against their children. The fact that it cares pasul is not true. So why does the second half of the pasuk say ubanim lo yimtu al avot? Should be, right, ubanim lo yimtu al avotam. Something like that, or avotehem. Right, if that's the case, the mashma loyim tu apibanim, shein them chayis avot. Sounds like if you don't have yichus samala, that you should be excluded. Mar says no. I did say loyim tu avot abanim, because I'm nami banim loyim tu avot. And that was parallel structure in the pasuk. Since the first half of the pasuk, we already had to do it with the limud for evet. So once we had that, then when it came to the second half of the pasuk, they didn't want to mix up the parallel structure. They left the structure intact, even though we only learned one thing from it and not two things from it. Right? Cheresh, shoteh, v'katan, p'kiyatan, ra. The Mishnah says that a cheresh, shoteh, and a katan, right, p'kiyatan, ra. Why? Because the damage that they do, they are psurim for. On the other hand, if you do damage to them, you are chayav. Eime, the Rav Shmuel, ba'avo, mehegrunia. Have a nesir le, the Rabbi Avo. The mother of Shmuel, ra'avo, was married to Rabbi Abba. It's not clear to me here why, if he's Rabbi Shmuel Bar Abba, then why isn't he also the son of Rabbi Abba? It seems like that she was, the Shmuel Bar Abba was born to her in a different marriage, and that she then married Rabbi Abba, which Shmuel Bar Abba? Kedvino the Nechfei Rabbi Shmuel Bar Abba brought, and she writes all of her possessions to her son, Shmuel Bar Abba. But the Shechiva, after she passed away, Azal Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. So Rav Shmuel Bar Abba, his brother, then comes before Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba, and Ukma Benichte. He comes to his brother, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba, and says, here, this is all yours. Your mother passed away. It all belongs to you. Azal Rabbi Abba. So Amar the Milta Kamed Rav Hoshia. So Rabbi Abba went, and then he tells over the story or the situation before Rav Hoshia. So again, you have Rav Shmuel Bar Abba and you have Yirmiyahu Bar Abba. Whether they were really brothers, or whether they were, stepbrothers. It's not so clear from the context over here. And again, the fact that he's the Shmuel of Shmuel Bar Abba somewhat indicates that he was the son of Abba, but the way the Gemara phrases the original case, that he was the son of his mother, right, but not, and then she was married to Rabbi Abba, sounds like Rabbi Abba wasn't necessarily his father. So I don't know, again, if they're really brothers or they are stepbrothers over here.
I don't know if they said she, based on,
Rabbi Abba. Right. I assume that's what it seems like in the context of the Gemara. It just reads funny because you have two Bar Abbas that are brothers, but they're really stepbrothers and not really brothers. Alright. Atazar Rabbi Abba, I'm rather Milka Kameh to Rabbi Yoshia. So he told over the story to Rabbi Yoshia that they gave that his brother, Rabbi Yirmiyahu Abba, had given all the possessions to Rabbi Shmuel Abba based on the tzava or the the contract that his mother had written out, that she gave over all her possessions to her son, Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. Other Rav Hoshia, Amra Kameh de Rav Yehuda. And then Rav Hoshia went and said before Rav Yehuda, Amalei Yochi Amar Shmuel, this is what Shmuel says, Aisha, Shumachra B'Nichsei Meluk, a woman who sells her Nichsei Meluk, right, things that belong to her, but the Baal has rights to, B'Meshtamesh B'Adem Meperot, B'Chayei Bala, Umeita, she sold them during her lifetime of her husband and dies, Abal Motim Yad Al-Kuchot. The husband can pull it out of the lukuchot. He can remove it from the hand of the lukuchot. So if that's the case, then also over here, he should be able to retract or reverse the gift of his wife. She's gifting materials that really belong to the husband. Who's the Yoresh of the wife? The Yoresh of the wife is the husband. So over here, by selling it or giving it to her son, she was mafkia the rights of her husband. So being mafkia the rights of her husband, the child becomes like a lekuvach, right? He becomes like a buyer. That's the case. The husband should have the right to take it back. That's the case. Rabbi Abba can take it back and then distribute it among his children. So Amruah came to Rabbi Yirmiyah ba Abba. So then they told over to Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba, this Amruahu Ana Matnita Yadano. Says, I know, all I know is the way I paskin, and why I give it to my brother, or my stepbrother, is that I know a bright, or here's a Mishnah, right? It's not a Kotev Nechasav Lizneolach Armuto. Person who writes his possessions to his son after his death. Now again, it has to be Miayom Ulach Armuto, because otherwise it won't be Tofet. You can't be Machnet something after your death. So Ma'amach Armuto, he gives all his possessions to his child, right? It sounds like from over here that he's trying to exclude the other children. I mean, he's giving everything to one child and not the other. During the lifetime of his father, the child can't transact in these items because the father has some ownership. It doesn't go to the child until after the father dies. And the father may not sell it because the child, in the end, will end up. It belongs to him. If the father passes away, it belongs to the child. Because they belong to the child. They each have partial ownership here. And that partial ownership is going to prevent the other from transacting. If the father goes ahead and does transact, despite the fact that he shuns up, if he does transact, then they are sold till the time he dies. Why? Because he can sell whatever rights he has. What rights does he have in his land or his property? Until he dies. So he can sell those rights to someone else. As soon as he dies, that's the right he sold, it'll go to the child. If the child sells it, then what? He can sell what is his rights. What's the rights of the child? The right to the child is that he will get possession of the property after the death of the father. So if he sells the property to a third party, the third party gets it when? Gets it after the fact that the father has died. Kimayidav, miha, itle lokeach. But nevertheless, we see that when the father dies, the lokeach does get it. Afagav demetav ben b'chaya av. Despite the fact that the son might have predeceased the father. So what happens here? You have a, right? Yeah, if the son, the Vahati Deben, right, that doesn't go to the child. Kid Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, just like Rabbi Shimon Lakish, the Amar, Loshna Meta Ben Bechayav, the Loatli Deben, Loshna Meta Abbechayav Ben, Atli Deben, the Kanalokeach. So what's going on here? We have a father who is gifting possessions to his son. When he gives possessions to his son, he says, they are gifted to you after I die. So when does the son take possession of those items? So that all depends. Do you say that the son actually has possession of these items right away? He really owns that which will happen after the death of his father right away. And therefore when he sells it, he's able to sell it, right, to the extent that even if he dies, he predeceases his father, that it's still a good sale. So he predeceases his father, he doesn't exist anymore, the son. His father passes away, he probably goes directly to the buyer. Why? Because while he was still alive, the Ben already had a tisa, had a kinyan in this property, and that's what he sold. Or you could say, what? That the Ben...
make it to that time.
Right. That the Ben's possession only really takes effect after the father dies. And the fact that he predeceases his father, right, that means that he never got possession of the property. If he never got possession of the property, he couldn't have sold something that he never had. That is going to be a machlokas Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in a second. We're just going to see that in a second here. But right now, what Rabbi Yirmiyah of Abba is saying, I have, right, we have Rabbi Yehuda says, I have the position of Shmuel. And we have a case here. We have a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda brings the position of Shmuel, and Rabbi Yirmiyah of Abba brings the position of Reish Lakish about what to do in this case. We have a case here. We have a mother who gave over her property to her son, Rav Shmuel Bar Abba. Right, his brother Rabbi Yirmiyah is now precluded or excluded from that. They have a their father or the husband, Rabbi Abba, should have inherited the wife. She prevented him from inheriting it by selling it or basically giving it to her son. Now is she entitled to do that? Now it's one thing. If the father passes away, her husband passes away, predeceases her, then what? There's nothing to talk about because then the possessions remain hers, and she can give them to whoever she wants. The problem is that she dies. When she dies, who's entitled to inherit her? The husband. And nevertheless, what are we saying? That the possession goes to the son, despite the fact that the husband should have inherited it. Now we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiyah Abba arguing about what position we should take here. Rabbi Yehuda brings down and says, I have Shmuel. What does Shmuel say? Shmuel says that a woman tries to sell her property out from under her bow, basically. which is that she sells her property to a buyer, an independent buyer, and then she dies. Who inherits her? The husband. And the husband inherits the, we have that the Shmuel says that the husband can go and pull the property back from the buyers. Why? Because he's the inheritor. She didn't have a right to sell it. She never got hold of the property. It all went to the husband. If that's the case, in our case also, Rav Shmuel Aber, when she gifted it to the son, right, the gift should not be a good gift. Why? It never came into her possession. It went to the husband, not to, it should not go to her son. If she was the exact same case. That's Rav Yehuda's position. Rav Yehuda says, no, that's not true. I have a Mishnah, as explained by Rish Lakish, that says what? That says that when a father gifts property to his child after his death, and the child predeceases the father. The child never dies before the father ever gets it into his possession. Nevertheless, when he sells the property, it's a good sale. Why is that? So we see from that, that a son who is gifted property in the lifetime of his father only after the death of the father, takes possession of it even before the father passes away. So if that's the case in our case too, Rav Shmuel Baba, when his mother gifted him the property, he took possession of the property even before his mother died, meaning that when his mother dies, it's really his, it goes to him, and then when the father passes away, it all comes down to him, meaning that the father doesn't have rights to it. So that's the makhlokes over here.
Exactly what rights does the mother have over the next time we look again during the marriage?
She has the carriage, so the principal belongs to her. The husband can eat the payroll, so he can use the property while he's married to her, and at the end of the term, he has to give that property back to her.
Even though there may be no end of term.
Right, so that's right. That might be the difference here. That's exactly what the Gemara is going to discuss that, which is a very good point that she's making. Maybe the principle is different over here. A father, always in the end, will die, and it will go to his children. Over here, it's not so clear that the, you know, if the woman passes away first, it goes to the husband. Right? If the husband dies, then it goes to the wife. But is that really an automatic situation? Because again, when the woman predeceases her husband, it really reverts to the, right, it reverts to the husband. In the case of the child, eventually the father will die, and it should belong to the children. So there is maybe a difference. And the Gemara is going to draw such a distinction, or similar distinction, that you wouldn't reject it, but there is such a distinction. Now the Gemara is going to explain the Machlokes Rish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan over here. This Mar, Machra ben b'chaya av, right, so the son sold in the chaya av, umeita ben b'chaya av, but the son predeceases the father. That the buyer is not koneh. I mean, since the son predeceased the father, it never came into possession of the son, and therefore the lokeach doesn't get it. Rish Lakish Amar Kana lokeach, we just saw this position of Rish Lakish, that despite the fact that the son predeceases the father, the son has enough of a kinyan here, that he can sell it forward, and it works even if he dies.
So let's explain it.
That's Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, we just heard Rish Lakish. Alright, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, lo kana lokeach, Rish Lakish says, kana lokeach. Alright, now, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kana Lo Keach. What's the explanation of Rabbi Yochanan's Shita? Amar Lo Kika Tani Matnisen Machar Ben Lo Kana Lo Keach Ad Shimota Av. Right? Chima Et Av is the Lo Keach. That only when the father dies, that Lo Keach get possession. But then it went into possession of the son, and then the son sold that possession, so that's fine. The Lo Meita Ben B'Chayah. That's the only case where the son does not predecease the father. The Adelie Da Ben, because then the son got possession of it. Of a meta ben b'chayav, if the son predeceases the father, to lo atu yadei ben, never enters the full possession of the son. He might av nami leislei lo lokeach. When the father passes away, the lokeach is totally out of the picture here because since the son never took possession of it, he couldn't have sold something he didn't have possession of. Alma kasavar must be that Rabbi Yochanan holds kinyan peros ki kinyan aguf dami. That a kinyan peros is like kinyan aguf. He's avin slavdi deizavin, and when he sells it, he does not sell his own property. So what's going on here? When the father gifts the property to his son after his death, now we have something called similar to like a remainder estate, which is that, right, whatever's left over afterwards goes to the son. In the interim, what can the father do? The father has use of the property. He gets the payroll of the property. Any production on the property belongs to the father because the gift only enters the son's possession after his death. So basically, the son owns the underlying property, the principal underlying it. But the output or the production of the property belongs to whom? Belongs to the father. So the father has what's called a kinyan peirot. He owns the production. And the son has a kinyan ha-guf. So now what does Rabbi Yochanan say? We're saying that Rabbi Yochanan says that a kinyan ha-peirot is kinyan ha-guf dami. That the father's ownership of the output is equivalent to a real possession of the property, a kinyan ha-guf. It's as if he owns the principal property. As long as you have kinyan peirot, it's kinyan guf. Why? What does that do? Because that's why you can prevent the son from selling it. The son can't sell it during the lifetime of the father because the father still has principal ownership during his lifetime. Right? As opposed to saying, right, which we're going to see in a second, is Reish Lakish. If you said Kinyan HaPeiros, lav k'Kinyan HaGuf Domi, say Kinyan HaPeiros is not like a Kinyan HaGuf, then what? Then that means the father, the son already owns the principal in the lifetime of the father. All he owns is the Kinyan HaPeiros. He doesn't own a Kinyan HaGuf, then the son can sell it, even though it comes into possession. That would be the key difference between Reish Lakish and Reish Lakish. So Alma Kassava, this is Rabbi Yochanan's position, Kinyan HaPeiros, Kinyan HaGuf Domi, that's why the father has the principal ownership. Chizavin lavi deizavin, and when the son sells it, he's not selling his own, he's selling his father's property. That he can't do. Shemin lavi shomer kana lokeach, kiktani matizin machara ben, in the lokeach achimot av, he might av, he has to play the lokeach. That once the father does pass away, the lokeach gets it. Loshna lo meita ben b'cheyav, atul izay ben, doesn't matter if the father dies first and the son actually gets possession of it. Loshna meita ben b'cheyav, doesn't matter if the son predeceases the father, zelo atul izay ben. It doesn't reach the hands of the ben. Kana lokeach. Alma kasabar. What is he thinking? Kinyan kaberos. Lav tikinyan aguf dami. Reish Lakish must hold that having ownership of the output of the property which the father has is not equal to having principal ownership. You don't have principal ownership, right? It's renting, it's a lease, it's the output of the, it's the output of the property. It's not kinyan aguf, it's not the principal. Right, when he sells it, he is selling his own property, because the ben, from that moment forward, owns the principal of the property. Right, so if he owns the principal of the property, he could sell it even before the father has passed away. It's now his, the principal is his from now, it's just the father has a leasehold on the property. Where it says, Ba'anon, Ashta, Ben Ribri Yirmiya Ba'ava, Uben Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Lavish, here a little. David Mar says, well, whether it's Rimi of Abba or Rabbi Yehuda's position, they hold like Reish Lakish. That there actually is a Kenyan over here. There is a Kenyan over here. So why do we say that? No, Rabbi of Abba makes sense, because that's what he's basically quoting. He's quoting this Mishnah, Aliba, and the Reish Lakish. So since he's quoting Aliba to Reish Lakish, he is holding like Reish Lakish. I mean, that's his proof. His proof is that the son is able to sell the property, or the principal property, prior to the father passing away. On the other hand, why do we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds by Reish Lakish? So you have to say the reason that Rabbi Yehuda says that the husband can take it back is because the husband can go take it back from the Lukuchot, which we're going to see in a second. Sounds like it was a Takana or Gzerat Chamim, and because of that Takana, he's able to take it back. Not that he was allowed to take it back because the Ikar Adin. The Ikar Din, if you held like Rabbi Yochanan, the Ikar Din, you would never take possession of the property because she predeceased the husband, and therefore she would get possession of it all. The fact that he says he can take it out of the Kuchot because of a Takana tells you that he holds like Reish Lakish, but there was a Takana that allowed him to take it out. So that's what the Gemara says. Ana Hashka, Ben Rabbi Yerbe Abba, Ben Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish, they both hold like Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish. And this is my focus. So we come out Rabbi Yerbe Abba, Rabbi Yerbe Abba says, Isaka Dasa Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Guftami. If you think Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Aguftavi, Ki Mayit Ab, Umayit Haben, Bechayab, Amayit Little Keach. Right? If you think that Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Aguftavi, Ki Mayit Ab, right? When the father passes away, Umayit Haben Bechayab, right? And the son predeceases the father, Amayit Little Keach. Why should Little Keach get any possession? Because of it, had love the day because of it, then he's not selling his own. El Lav Shmami, now you see for this, that Kinyan HaPeiros, Lav Kikinyan HaGuf Dami. And that is not like a Kinyan HaGuf. Now, Ahadrua, they come to Rabbi Yehuda. They went back to Rabbi Yehuda after Rabbi Yirmiyah gave his position and explained his position within the context of the Mishnah according to Reish Lakish. They do it, Ahadrua, they come to Rabbi Yehuda. They went back to Rabbi Yehuda and said, this is what Rabbi Yirmiyah of Abba's position is. Amelo, Achia Amar Shmuel. Zu eno doma or the mishnatenu. This case is not similar to our Mishnah. Shmuel says that this is not similar to our Mishnah. My taimo. So now, what's the reasoning? What does that mean that it's not like our Mishnah? So then, Rabbi Yehuda brings the Mishnah as his proof according to Reish Lakish, and then Shmuel said, no, there's a position over here that it's not. A wife has to, she sells in front of her husband and then dies. The husband can pull it out of the quote. And oh, you're bringing for that Mishnah. That Mishnah is not shayach in our case. What does that mean? The mission is not shayach in our case. So Amar my time. Amar Rav Yosef, Vishlama Yitani Ipcho. So Rav Yosef says it makes sense if you had reversed the mission. If the mission was written in the opposite, what is that? Hakutev Nichasav Lavid. You're writing your property to your father. A child gives over all of his property to his father. Ikal Mishnah Minah, therefore they conclude the Kinyan Perot lav Kinyan Gufdavi. Then you could have concluded that a Kinyan Perot is not like a Kinyan Gufdavi. El Hashto Diktani, but now we're not Mishnah says the Kodem Nechazav Lebino. Right? Because he gives his possessions to his children, Mishum Derayel Yoshohu. What's the reason the Kinyan works? It's because he's Ra'oyel Yoshohu. This is Tzvi, this is what you were suggesting before, that maybe there's a difference between a child and a wife. So what is it? Rav Yosef says, listen, there would have been, had you could have proved from this Mishnah, according to Reish Lakish, that Kinyan Perot, lav Kinyan Gufdami, which would be the position of Reish Lakish here, you could have proved it from the Mishnah if the Mishnah had written this. The son gave over his property to his father. He says, when I die, all my property goes to my father. So in that case, if you say that the father can sell it, then it was clear that Kinyan Perot, lav Kinyan Gufdami, why? Because the fact that the father can sell it means that the child, even though he owns the output of the property until he dies, nevertheless, that's only a leasehold. And the father really owns the principal right now, and he can sell it from under him. So that's what proves to you, Kinyan Perot, lav Kinyan Gufdami. But in our case, what the Mishnah says is that the father gave it to the child. The father gave it to a child, it might be that the child has ownership here, not because Kinyan Perot, lav Kinyan Gufdami, not because the father no longer has possession, but because the natural sequence of events is that the father will give over stuff to the child. So since that's the natural sequence of events, the child already has some sort of ownership in the property. And then when the father gives it to him, he basically is machzik that ownership that the child already has in it. Since the child is going to inherit his father anyway, and then the father says it's a gift to you, the two of them together make it into a fact that he has a strong enough hold on the property that he can sell it. But not because Kinyan Perot lav Kinyan Gufdami. In Okanami, normally Kinyan Perot would be Kinyan Guf. Over here, there's a stronger Kinyan of the child because he has two things. He has a gift from his father, plus he's going to be Yoresh's father. That's what Rav Yosef suggests. So I'm going to let Abaye. Abaye says, wait a minute. Why does that make so much sense? Atu bro yarit Abba, Abba lo yarit bro. Does a child inherit his father, but a father doesn't inherit a child? That's not true. It's a two-way street. Children inherit their parents. But parents also inherit their children. If children predecease their parents, a chas v'shalom, without any children, then the Yerusha goes back up to the father. So there's a two-way street. Ella, what's the case here? La v'rechinu v'nechsei machrei. Why is he selling the property? Gazi, what is he trying to do here when he tries to sell the property? He's trying to get the property away from others. Hachanami la v'rechinu v'nechsei me'achuati. And also over here, when he sold the property, he's trying to get away from the brothers. So now, he says the cases are exactly similar. The child who sells it to the father, what's he trying to do? He's trying to disinherit his children. He sells it to his father because he doesn't want his children to inherit him, so he disinherits his children by giving it to the father. Right? On the other hand, why does the mother over here give it to her child, Rav Shmuel Baba? Why is she giving it away? Because she wants to disinherit the other brothers. She's trying to kill the other brothers. So it's exactly the same case. Both of them are gifting to avoid the normal path of Yerusha. So they both, right? The exact same cases. So I revealed to them, I'm sorry, but he says they are the same cases. You can't say that's not the comparison. Elo, ma'inu doma l'mishmoteinu. What does it mean that they're not similar to our Mishnah? Mishum takanat usha. Because the takana of usha. What's the takana of usha? Damar Rav Yosef bar Berachina, b'usha yitkinu, in usha they rematkin, ha'isha shemacha menichtzei mechuk b'chaye bala, u'meita abao, mosim yad lukhot, meita abao mosim yad lukhot. A woman who sells her nichsei malug during the lifetime of her husband and predeceases him, then a baal can go take it out of the kuchot. What does that mean? That means that even though peros, you're right, kinyan peros, lav to kinyan agufdami, owning output, owning the leasehold is not sufficient to have a full acquisition in the principal. And that means that a wife can sell her nichsei malug, if a father gives the child his property, he can sell it, and even if he predeceases his father, then it works, right? That's a good sale. Because giving that gift makes it into the full owner. Kinyan HaPeirot, lav Kinyan HaGufdami. Leaving the residual output to the father or to the husband doesn't give them rights in the property. Therefore, if the son predeceases the father and then the father dies, it goes straight to the lokeach. Goes to the buyer because the son had the right to sell it. So do with Isha. If she sells it, it's a good sale. Except, it's a takanat usha. Takanat usha is that if a wife sells from under her husband, then they have to take it back. That's what he means it's not similar. It's a difference between a father gifting to the child and a mother who sells. A mother who sells is under the takana of usha. Mother sells is under the takana of usha, you gotta pull it back. Because that's the takana of usha. When it comes to a father that sells to the child, that's not included in the takana of usha. Therefore, it's a good sale. So again, the ikar adin, kinyan ha'perot, lav kinyan ha'gufdami. And therefore, when you give away the property, it's a good sale. If you only have access to it through payroll, that is not good ownership. And the son can sell it, the wife can sell it, they both own the property, sell it. The difference between a father and a mother is, and the mother giving it, selling it or gifting it, is that she has this kind of usha that comes back and says that, alime the shibude de bao. They extended or strengthened the power of the bao that he has the right to go pull it back from the kuchot. On the other hand, a child, right, when a father gives it to a child, there's no such solution, therefore it'll go through, the sale will go through, and even the son predeceases the father, right, it won't work. So that was the difference between Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, basically, you can't compare. You're right, Rabbi Yehuda, you're right. Your whole position, how you explain the Mishnah is all right. So the problem is that you left out the Tanazusha, and the Tanazusha changes the status of this specific transaction, where it's the wife who did it. The Tosfos asks generally an interesting question that here we paskin, as Rashi points out, here also that we paskin like Rish Lakish. There are three places that we paskin like Rish Lakish versus Rabbi Yochanan. This is one of the three places where we paskin like Rish Lakish. That means that kana lokea. Kinya peiro, lav kinya neguftami. That means when you own the output of a property, you're not kinya peiro. We also paskin that there's no such thing as breira. When it comes to midoraisa, dinim doraisa, there's no breira. That means Tosfos says you're going to come up with this unbelievable case here. That children who inherit their parents, when they inherit parents, they're kilukuchotami. They're like buyers, because since there's no breira, we don't know who the property really went to. When they divide the property, it's basically they're selling to each other the different pieces of the property. If that's the case, what happens? They become a kuchot. They become buyers of the property, and the yovel, it'll go back. So if the yovel goes back, what do you have on the property? You just have a leasehold on the property until the yovel. That means that if I have a leasehold on the property, and kinyan peirot, lav ki kinyan aguf dami, and having a kinyan on the leasehold, or the output of the property, is not like a kinyan aguf, that means I don't own the property. If I don't own the property, I can't bring bikurin. That means that nobody could ever bring bikurin. Because everybody, unless you are time for Yeshua Binun, it was a one child, a single child. One son, the son of one son, the son of one son, that's the only way to get a Yerusha where you still really own the property. As soon as you have multiple sons, you're going to have Ein Breira, they're the Kukhot. They become the Kukhot, they only have a Kenyan payroll. So they're Kenyan payroll, they don't own the property. How can you ever bring bikurin? You can't say, it's my land. How are you going to fix that? So Tosfos says that there's a nuance. He says that he agrees, even though that we passed in that Kenyan payroll, Kibbutz Kenyan Gukam, and we passed in that the children are like Lukukhot in terms of the fact, right, that there is no Breira. Nevertheless, the fact that they've turned the Yovel, he says that is only the opinion of Yochanan, but everybody else agrees that even though they are Lukukhot, there is a Xerath the Khatub that they're Lukukhot, but it doesn't go back in the Yovel. Despite the fact that they're buyers, they don't go back in the Yovel. If that's the case, then they don't have a leasehold on the property. It doesn't go back. They own the principal. If they own the principal, then they effectively can bring Bikurim because they have a Kinyan of Guf on the Karaka, not just a Kinyan of Payroll. Okay, we'll stop over here.